All right, we'll let the musicians go down at this time while you're turning in your Bibles to the book of Genesis, chapter 20. All right, out of respect for the Word of God, let's stand together as I begin reading there with verse 1. And Abraham journeyed from thence toward the south country and dwelt between Kadesh and Shur and sojourned in Gerar. And Abraham said to Sarah, his wife, she is my sister. Said of Sarah, his wife, she is my sister. And Abimelech, king of Gerar, sent and took Sarah. But God came to Abimelech in a dream by night and said to him, behold, thou art but a dead man for the woman which thou hast taken, for she is a man's wife.
In Genesis chapter 19, God destroyed Sodom for their wickedness. In chapter 19, verse 27, Abraham saw the smoke of Sodom rising up like a furnace. And we read how his nephew Lot ended up a caveman and lived out the rest of his life in shame. That ends the record of Lot in Genesis. We're not going to talk about him any further. The Bible doesn't tell us any more information about him in the Old Testament. And it doesn't even tell us how or when or how he died. It just, he's gone from the history of the Bible until we see him again in the New Testament, where he's described as just and righteous. As we move into chapter 20, we're going to read of a peculiar incident in Abraham's life. In J. Vernon McGee's Through the Bible commentary, he says on this chapter, chapter 20 seems about as necessary as a fifth leg on a cow. He said, it's a chapter you feel as if you would like to leave out. But we're going to find here that there are some wonderful truths, and in fact, some that perhaps you've never considered before. And once again, God does not include things that unless they are for our benefit. There is a sense of deja vu with this passage because Abraham and Sarah will repeat the same dishonest plan they tried in Egypt. This chapter is very similar to Genesis chapter 12, where soon after their arrival in Canaan, they went down into Egypt to flee a famine. And Abraham had the big idea to protect himself and his wife, or protect himself really, by claiming that his wife was his sister, just in case any foreign kings got to looking at Sarah. Now, it didn't work either time. His big idea was 0 for 2. By the way, someone said that insanity is repeating the same behavior and expecting different results. Some of us are up to 0 and 10 and we're still trying the same dumb ideas. You know the old saying, how's that working for you, Abraham? Hasn't worked either time. Let's drop it. And unfortunately, we're going to see it again in Isaac's life. But there's more here than just the dishonest, deceitful plan of Abraham and the embarrassing results. For one thing, we have a record of God speaking to a man other than Abraham. Now, this is important because in Genesis we have seen how the world has turned their backs on God and embraced polytheism, the worship of many gods and many different things. We've seen that God called out one man, Abraham, to found a family that would found a nation that would hold on to that monotheistic truth and through which God would give the Scriptures and His way of worship and one day would send His Son. Now, from the time that Noah got off the ark to this incident, God has not spoken to anyone but Abraham. That's important. And here God speaks in a dream to a heathen, a Philistine, Abimelech, one of the kings of Gerar. Now, after Noah got off the ark, there's only a few times in the Pentateuch when God speaks to someone other than a Jew. For example, He speaks to Abimelech here. Later He speaks, gives revelation to Pharaoh through Joseph. In Numbers, God spoke to Balaam. But this is the first time that God has spoken to someone other than Abraham since Noah got off the ark. He didn't even speak to Pharaoh back in Genesis 12. He just plagued Pharaoh until Pharaoh said there's something going on and realized what had happened. But God didn't actually speak to Pharaoh. And so we're going to have something to say about that toward the end of the lesson tonight. But there's some important moral lessons and truths for us in this chapter as well. Consider this chapter under five headings this evening. Number one, notice a relocation. A relocation, verse 1. And Abraham journeyed from thence toward the south country and dwelled between Kadesh and Shur and sojourned in Gerar. Now, Gerar was southwest towards Egypt. It's about as far as you can go before you get into the Sinai Peninsula on your way into Egypt. It was inhabited by a new group of people that had recently arrived from the sea named the Philistines. Now, the Philistines were not Canaanites. They were descendants of Ham, but they were from different sons. The Canaanites came from Canaan, while the Philistines came from another son, Mizraim. And so they're distant cousins, but they're not actually Canaanites. They were part of what was called the Sea Peoples. By the way, I would like to know more about the Sea Peoples. We wonder sometimes, how did folks get to Australia? How did folks get to North America? How did they get to South America? How did they get to the islands of the sea? Well, maybe they were part of these Sea Peoples that were going who knows where. By the way, did you know, you might not have read this, but there was a discovery recently of that showed that some of the first people to North America were actually from Europe. According to some DNA tests they ran recently, you can look that up later. But isn't it interesting how people were spreading out exactly as God said? And some of these folks, these Sea People, ended up in the south corner of Canaan, and they were known as the Philistines. Abimelech was a title for their kings, much like Pharaoh was in Egypt. So was not really a personal name as much as a title. Now, it says that he was between Kadesh and Shur. Kadesh may sound familiar because that is where the 10 spies brought back their evil report to Moses. That was the entrance into the promised land from the south. Now, I'm not sure where Shur was. I couldn't find any maps that identified where Shur was. So I'm not even sure if, I'm not even certain if Abraham was still in the promised land or not. It's murky. And I think there's even a truth there because some Christians, they're just kind of on the edge of the will of God for their lives. It's kind of even hard to tell if they're doing the will of God or not because they're just kind of got one foot in the promised land and one foot out of the promised land. And we can't even tell if he's in or out of the land that God promised him. Now, it's possible that he was still in. I'm just pointing out that it's not clear. And there were many other places he could have moved. He could have went to Bethel. Could have went to the north country. And yet he's down on the edge of the promised land in this land called Gerar. Now, why did Abraham suddenly move? And he's been in Hebron for a while. And then just all of a sudden, he and Sarah moved southwest to Gerar. Why is that? Now, it's always interesting to me as a pastor to see when Christians are doing fine, God's blessing them, their family's doing well, their kids are growing in the Lord, and all of a sudden they say, well, it's time to move. Why? Why do you want to move when God is blessing you? And we need to be careful about moving when God is doing things in our lives. Now, here's why I think that they moved. In the last chapter, he looks off toward the east and sees smoke rising like a furnace, like a volcano had gone off. And I just have a feeling that that part of the land was smoke and ash. And some of that ash is Sodomites. Think about that. And who knows what's billowing up from the Dead Sea area. And maybe the smell of it is strong, maybe the smoke and ash. Just look up sometime what happens after a volcano and you see ash that just, the wind carries it all over the place. So maybe he's getting away from that. So he decides to move to the southwest. I'm not sure, but that's my theory. Now, another thing I don't understand is why he would move to Gerar, especially considering his fear of their lack of morality. I mean, he's going to this place and he looks around and says, the fear of God is not here, and yet he goes there anyway. It doesn't really make sense to me. As I said, he could have went to Bethel. He could have went up in the mountains of Galilee. Could have went up to around the Sea of Galilee. All of that was in the land God promised him. And yet he goes to this place where the Philistines are and where they're heathen and they worship false gods and they don't seem to have a fear of the true and living God. Why would he do that? I think this goes down into the category of people are funny. Yeah, I mean, sometimes even good people make decisions and you just kind of shake your head. And you ask, what were they thinking? Huh? What are Abraham and Sarah thinking? Why are they putting themselves in this position? I don't know. And sometimes I think that we look back on our own lives and say, what was I thinking? Y'all with me? What were my kids thinking? What were my parents thinking? What were my friends? What were you thinking when you made that decision? I think Sarah and Abraham and Sarah kind of illustrate that for us tonight. Certainly this move is going to put them in a bad position. But it was a relocation. Number two, notice the situation. Situation, verse 2. And Abraham said of Sarah, his wife, she is my sister. And Abimelech, king of Gerar, sent and took Sarah. Isn't it amazing how concise the Bible is? 20 words later, Sarah's in somebody else's house. Isn't that amazing? 20 words later, she's out of Abraham's house and some other guy's house. They've come into this area. And now here's something else that amazes me. Because we know Sarah is 89 or almost 90 years old. Why is Abraham so worried? I'm not trying to be unkind. But she's almost 90 years old. I think maybe when God did this miracle that's going to produce Isaac, maybe God turned back the clock a little bit on them. Maybe she looked younger again. I don't know. I talked to a preacher friend about that today, and he wasn't so sure about that. And he's a pretty smart guy because he usually agrees with me, so. So that's just my theory, and John R. Rice felt the same way about it. Maybe she was just very well preserved. I don't know. But Abraham said, man, when these men see you, they're going to kill me to get you. And she must have been a stunning and unique looking woman in that part of the world. And guess what? As soon as she went to Egypt, Pharaoh said, got to have her. And as soon as they went to Gerar, Abimelech said, got to have her. And so his fears were partly justified because she was an exceptionally beautiful woman, even at that point in her life. Now, Abraham hatched the plot. It was an old plan. We've seen it already. Of tell everyone I'm your brother, you're my sister. That way they won't kill me to take you. Now, what was his motivation? We're going to see his motives in verse 11 through 13. Notice verse 11. And Abraham said, because I thought, surely the fear of God is not in this place, and they will slay me for my wife's sake. And yet indeed she is my sister. She is the daughter of my father, but not the daughter of my mother. And she became my wife. And it came to pass, when God caused me to wander from my father's house, that I said unto her, this is thy kindness which thou shalt show unto me. At every place whither we shall come, say of me, he is my brother. All right, let me give you some sub-points on this. Number one, he made a wrong assumption. He made a wrong assumption. He said, surely the fear of God is not in this place. Now, I don't know what he saw. Maybe he saw the idolatry, saw the practices of the people, and he said, surely the fear of God is not in this place. And he assumed, therefore, that they would murder him to take his wife. Now, we don't know if they would have murdered him to take his wife because he lied. But it certainly seems that when God corrected Abimelech, that Abimelech was afraid and feared God and did the right thing. I think sometimes we as Christians, we like to assume the worst about people, especially if they're not like us. Right? You see some guy, his appearance looks rough, maybe looks like a biker. By the way, I saw a biker the other day. He had those big handlebars that come up to the front, but just they were like this wide. I mean, he's riding his motorcycle like this. I don't know how he did. And then he passed us, and he had a picture on his, he had a blue jean jacket, jacket on, or vest, you know, with the name of his gang on the back. He's probably an accountant. But on his back, had a picture of Bob Ross, the painter. You know, with the afro, the joy of painting. I mean, that's a tough biker gang right there, brother. I wouldn't want to mess with them. They'll paint you, you know. Let me show you a happy pair of brass knuckles. You know. But maybe you see someone, guy's got long hair, tattoos, piercings and stuff like that. And you might think, that guy's going to kill me. He might be the nicest guy you ever met. You don't know. Or he might kill you. You don't know. But I'm just pointing out that sometimes we assume things about people that person doesn't fear God because they're not like me. When they may fear God, and there may be things that they would never do that you might do. So you've got to be careful about jumping to conclusions and assuming. Sometimes we get discouraged about our country. We think, there's no decency left. Really? None anywhere? Just us? I think there's probably still some decent people out there. And so we can't get like Elijah. So I'm the only one left. Everyone else has bowed to Baal. 7,000 haven't bowed the knee to Baal. You just don't know it, you see. And you're definitely not going to find them sitting under that juniper tree. But he assumed that there was no fear of God in that place. When actually, in this case, Abimelech was right in a way, while Abraham was totally wrong. I'm not going to give Abimelech total credit. He already had one wife. He didn't need another one. But in this case, he was the one that got to look down on Abraham. So you ought not have done this to me. And it was very embarrassing. Sometimes I think that we think that we own morality. When folks from other churches or no church may actually have some sense of morals too. They wouldn't steal from you. If your money was laying out and they knew they wouldn't get caught, they wouldn't steal it from you. And so you must be careful not to assume things. Character counts. And I'm ashamed to say that some Christians, you go to church, have poor character. They don't have as good a character in some areas as some people who don't go to church. They're habitually dishonest. They lie. They cheat. They steal. They're deceitful. They don't pay their bills. I got to confess a little embarrassment today. We had a flat tire on the shuttle bus last week. So I called my friends at Wiley Tire. I've been doing business with them for years and years, just down here on 78. And they have a mobile service. Now, I don't want to jack up a shuttle bus and take the tire off. So I called the mobile service to come out. And they just drove up, popped it off, put a new tire on and left. Didn't tell me that they even showed up. So I was supposed to go by and pay it. And I forgot. Friday. And I thought Saturday, I'm going to call them Saturday morning. I forgot. Monday, didn't even think about it. Tuesday, didn't think about it. Wednesday, the phone rings, look down, Wiley Tire. It's on my speed dial because I use them so much. Oh, no. I didn't pay the bill. And I said, hello. He said, hi, this is Wiley Tire. I said, I'm so sorry. I said, let me get my credit card. Can you take payment over the phone? Yeah, oh, yeah, no problem. I said, it makes my nerves to think that a bill is not paid. You know, some Christians, and some preachers, I'm ashamed to say, they don't pay their bills. They have a bad testimony, a bad reputation for being dishonest. Now, he assumed the worst of Abimelech when Abimelech actually had more integrity in this particular instance than Abraham revealed. Now, I believe Abraham, on a whole, was way above Abimelech. But in this instance, he was wrong and Abimelech was right. Okay? So he made the wrong assumption. Then he made a faithless decision. It was a faithless decision. He did not trust God to protect them in Gerar. That's the bottom line. Why else would you practice this deception unless you just don't trust God to protect you if you do the right thing? Hadn't God already said, I will be thy shield back in Genesis 15? By the way, who is the one who bailed him out? God. Think God could have taken care of him? Yes. Sometimes we make faithless decisions and we make wrong decisions because of a lack of faith. He made a dishonest decision, or I should say, he decided to be dishonest. He decided to be dishonest. Now, she was his sister. She's what you call a half-sister. They didn't have both parents together, but yet they had the same father. You know, they might have grown up in separate families if there was polygamy involved. But anyway, it was the same father, different mothers, and she started out as his half-sister, and she became his wife. So she's half a sister, but she is 100% wife. You don't have a half wife. Half sister, all wife. But she says, oh yeah, he's my brother. Oh, she's just my sister. No, she's not just your sister. She's your wife. You see, it was dishonest and it was a lie. It was living a lie by passing themselves off as brother and sister. By the way, if you notice in verse number 5, Abimelech says, said he not unto me, she is my sister, and she Even she herself said, he is my brother. See how they both were partners in this lie and this deception, but Abraham was the instigator of it. She was a co-conspirator, but he was the one in charge. By the way, I can't imagine putting my wife in a position where she had to lie for me. You husbands, you don't have the right to order your wife to lie for you. If you just want to stay home on Sunday, your wife should not lie and say, he's sick, when you're home watching football. But I know of men in churches who say, if I tell my wife to lie, she should lie. That's the kind of man I wouldn't walk across the street to slap. That kind of stupid ideology of I'm like God, I can tell my wife to lie or sin because I'm the boss. That's stupid. None of us has the right to order someone else to commit a sin. Amen. You don't have the right to tell your children to commit a sin. Go rob the bank, you obey your father. It's stupid. And it's stupid for him to, I'll get to that, but it's wrong for him to enlist her into this lie. So now both of them are lying and both of them are living a lie. Number four, he made a cowardly decision. Cowardly decision. He's worried about himself. They'll kill me to get you. And I want to know, where's Abraham the fighter? I mean, back in chapter 14, when Lot got captured by the invading kings, Abraham got his servants together and armed them and chased after that army and defeated them in a nighttime battle. And now he's afraid of these Philistines in Gerar. Where's your soldiers? Where's your weapons? Where's your fighting spirit? Now you're going to practice deception instead of stepping up. You know, a man ought to be ready and willing to fight for his wife or fight for his life. He'd rather lie and be a coward than to stand up for Sarah. And then he made a dumb decision. So how do you know it's dumb? Because it didn't work last time. I mean, when you've done this once before and it didn't work, why would you do it again? It's a dumb decision. Didn't work. It's insanity. I'm going to do it again. Maybe it'll work this time. I'll be one and one. Sometimes we just don't learn from our mistakes. And folks, a mistake can be a lesson, all right? But if you keep making the same mistake, you're not learning your lesson. So you've got to be wiser than that. So we made a wrong assumption followed by a decision that was faithless, dishonest, cowardly, and dumb. And so Abimelech took her to be one of his wives. We know he had at least one pregnant wife at the end of the chapter, and probably had other wives too. So he's just building his harem. He saw Sarah, she's beautiful, I want her. Is this your wife? No, this is my sister. This is your brother? This is my brother. Okay, you're mine. And he took her. And so that's the situation. Shall we praise Abraham for this? We praise him not. Amen. Notice thirdly, we saw a relocation, we saw the situation. Notice thirdly, a revelation. In verse 3, But God came to Abimelech in a dream by night and said to him, behold, thou art but a dead man for the woman which thou hast taken, for she is a man's wife. And talk about a bad dream. When God comes to you in a dream and says you're going to die, that's a bad dream. And God is revealing himself in a way through this dream to Abimelech. Notice verse 4, but Abimelech had not come near her, and he said, Lord, wilt thou slay also a righteous nation? Said he not unto me, she is my sister, and she herself said, he is my brother. In the integrity of my heart and innocency of my hands have I done this. And God said unto him in a dream, yea, I know that thou didst this in the integrity of thine heart, for I also withheld thee from sinning against me. Therefore I suffered thee not to touch her. Now therefore restore the man his wife, for he is a prophet, and he shall pray for thee, and thou shalt live. And if thou restore her not, know thou that thou shalt surely die, thou and all that are thine. So God says, that woman you took is another man's wife. God says, I didn't know that. Abimelech said, I didn't know that. I'm innocent. And I had integrity. I wouldn't take a man's wife. I mean, there's folks, they draw lines. They don't care who sleeps with who until they're married, you see. But God has a stricter line than that, doesn't he? And so I'm innocent of this. Now, he also said, wilt thou slay a righteous nation? I want you to note that God never agreed that they were a righteous nation. He agreed that Abimelech had not intentionally taken another man's wife. He said, no, you didn't intentionally take another man's wife. I know that they deceived you. But he never agreed that they were a righteous nation. Now, that's important. That's an important truth. By the way, Abimelech also said, I haven't come near her. And you know what God said? That's because I haven't let you. Abimelech reminds me of guys in jail. So I didn't, you know, they come up with all kinds of excuses and everything. And it's like, who do you think you're fooling? He's talking to God here. God never said he was righteous. God said he knew that he was deceived. When Abimelech said, I haven't come near, God said, I'm the one that kept you away. God never agreed that he or his people were righteous. Now, to apply that today, many people will protest that they are righteous. But unless God says you're righteous, you're not righteous. God says there's none righteous, no, not one. And the only righteousness that any of us has is the imputed righteousness of Christ. So unless God says you're righteous, you're not righteous. Now you can say, we're a righteous nation. We don't take other men's wives. Yeah, we have 10 wives, but we don't take other men's wives. And yeah, we worship false gods, but we're a righteous nation. God says, no, you're not righteous. You're not righteous. By the way, being better than Abraham in this matter didn't make him righteous either. Well, he's your prophet, that preacher. I'm better than him. That didn't matter. You know, there's some folks who their entire eternal hope is on being better than some Christians they know. Well, you know, I'm better than that person. I'm better than that Christian. I'm better than most of the people that go to church. I'm better than some of these preachers on television. So what? My dog's better than the preachers on television. That's God never made a promise to us that you'll go to heaven if you're better than most Christians, or any Christians, or Abraham. And, it's a sad thing when folks are counting on being better than some dishonest, crooked excuse for a Christian, or some lousy excuse for a preacher. You need the righteousness of Jesus Christ, not just righteousness that's better than someone else, you see. Bottom line is that if a person doesn't get born again saved, they're not righteous in the sight of God, and they won't go to heaven when they die. They will die and go to hell. And it won't matter if they're better than some sorry, sawed-off excuse for a Christian. They won't even be better than Lot. And yet Lot was righteous because of his faith in God. God said, thou art but a dead man. A lost man is dead in his trespasses and sins. He's already spiritually dead. That's why God said, thou art, present tense. You're but a dead man. You're still breathing and walking around, but you're but a dead man. You're spiritually dead. And if you don't give this man his wife back, you're going to be physically dead. And so you said, is God threatening him? Uh-huh. Yeah, God does that. Wish people would take God's threats more seriously. So we see a relocation, we see the situation, we see a revelation. Notice the indignation. Verse 8, therefore Abimelech rose early in the morning and called all his servants and told all these things in their ears, and the men were sore afraid. Well, Abraham said, there's no fear of God in this place. But I see some fear. Verse 9, then Abimelech called Abraham and said unto him, what hast thou done unto us? What have I offended thee, that thou hast brought on me and on my kingdom a great sin? Thou hast done deeds unto me that ought not to be done. Now how embarrassing is that? Let me tell you, there are lost people that love to have an opportunity to climb up on their high horse and look down on God's people. Back when I worked on the dock, and I was in Bible college, and there'd be guys that didn't like me. They didn't like anybody. I mean, just mean people there. Hey, Tilton, Robert Tilton, Jiltum Tilton, you know, Swaggart. And they'd pull up whatever fallen preacher they could come up with, and they'd throw that at me. You know. They love these guys that used to get off work and go to the bars and get drunk, go to these wicked places around Grand Prairie. But they love to sit up on their high horses. Well, at least I'm not Robert Tilton. Or at least I'm not Jim Baker. Or at least I'm not that guy there. At least I'm better than that. Boy, it's a sad thing when Christians give that opportunity. Why, by our actions, we allow them to get up on their high horse and look down on us and criticize us and feel better than us or feel righteous compared to us. That's a bad testimony for Jesus Christ. Listen to this verse in Proverbs 25:26. A righteous man falling down before the wicked is as a troubled fountain and a corrupt spring. Now, I don't think I'm better than anyone, and I don't try to be better than anyone, but I recognize that my testimony, if I am a fallen person, I have a fallen testimony, it's going to harden the hearts of the unsaved towards the gospel. A righteous man falling down before the wicked is as a troubled fountain, a corrupt spring. Well, we should be, the water of life should be springing up through us to the lost, but if we have a fallen testimony, it's going to be spreading forth a bad testimony for God instead of a good, Christ-honoring testimony. So here's Abimelech on his high horse. You've done things you ought not have done. Notice in verse 14, Abimelech took sheep and oxen and men servants and women servants and gave them unto Abraham and restored him Sarah's wife. Now God didn't even tell him to do that. I don't know why he did it. Honestly. Gave a dowry afterwards. Verse 15, he said, Behold, my land is before thee. Dwell where it pleaseth thee. And unto Sarah he said, Behold, I have given thy brother 1,000 pieces of silver. Behold, he is to thee a covering of the eyes unto all that are with thee and with all other. And thus she was reproved. I called a friend earlier today. I said, What do you think this means? I'll tell you what I think it means. Well, first of all, he was being sarcastic with her. Notice he said, I've given thy brother. Not your husband. I've given thy brother. And so it's kind of a snide. Whatever he's saying is kind of snide. All right. It says, thus she was reproved. So he's reproving her by saying this. And when it says a covering of the eyes, that's something that's a little ambiguous, but the word covering tends to mean a veil, like a bridal veil. But it seems like maybe the women back then, they typically wore a veil that covered from their eyes and the front of their face, not the back, from their eyes down. But he said, your veil is over your eyes. In other words, it's like you're a blind person and your husband just kind of leads you along like you can't think for yourself. I think that's kind of the reproof that he's given to her. I may be wrong on that, but he definitely was being snide and sarcastic with her. Now, it's interesting to note that Abimelech did not kick him out of the country like Pharaoh did in Genesis 12. In fact, he said to him, you can stay anywhere you want in the land. Now, why didn't he kick Abraham out? He feared God. Abraham said, there's no fear of God here. And yet Abimelech seems to say, hey folks, God said this man's a prophet. If he wants to stay, he can stay. We're not going to touch him. We're not going to touch his wife. Everyone leave them alone. We're not going to mess with God because God came to me in a dream and threatened all of us. And if he wants to stay here, just let him stay. If he wants to leave, let him leave. We're not going to touch this prophet of God. All right. And so it's important. I think that's an important truth for us. Who art thou that judgest another man's servant? If someone is God's servant, who am I to mess with them unnecessarily? Let's let God deal with them. And if it's not our particular business to be involved in. Now, notice fifthly, a supplication. This is kind of a funny part of the story. When in verse 17, so Abraham prayed unto God. And I think that was embarrassing too. It's like if I called two kids that were, Aiden got in trouble with some other kid. And I called him up and I said, Aiden, I chewed Aiden out for doing the wrong thing. And I said, now Aiden, pray for him. He may not feel like praying. He might want to just be quiet. He's going to pray for the other person. And so here, Abimelech says, God said, you're going to pray for me. So you need to pray for me. And so Abraham prayed for him. And notice this is, and God healed Abimelech and his wife and his maidservants, and they bare children. Now, here's a big point. Abimelech may have felt more righteous than Abraham, but he needed Abraham to get to God. He needed Abraham to get to God. Now think about this with the big picture. The Gentile needed the Hebrew to go to God. See that? The Gentile needed the Hebrew to go to God. When we study the history of the Jews in the Old Testament, all the way to the time of Christ, Well, what do we find about Israel? Stiff-necked, stubborn, rebellious, idolatrous. To the point where God removed them from the land and put them in captivity, right? And you say, those Jews, they're so troublesome, so rebellious, I bet God's done with them. Why would God even use them? Well, be careful. Be careful. Because we Gentiles needed the Hebrews. We needed them to go to God. Because it was through them that God gave us the Bible. And it was through them that God established His worship. And it was through them that God sent forth His Son. And I remind you again that Jesus was a Jew, and the apostles were all Jews, and the early church was mostly Jewish. So I appreciate the Jews in the past. I anticipate what God will do with the Jews in the future. But I will not curse the Jews or lift a finger against them. Won't wag my tongue against them. Because we needed them. God chose them for a reason. And that Gentile, Abimelech, needed Abraham to pray for him. Or he wasn't going to get what he needed. Abimelech also, again, didn't kick the Hebrew out of his land. If you study the history of the Jews, as I have done, I used to teach a summer school class on the history of the Jews from the time of the Babylonian captivity to today. And you'll find that their history is filled with nations that said, no Jews here anymore. Get out of our country. You're expelled, or we're going to kill you. We're going to steal all your property. We don't want the Jews in our land. But this Gentile said, the Hebrew can stay in our land as long as he wants. Amen? To me, that's pretty neat. That's pretty neat. And that's, by the way, did you know that most Jews in the world today, it's like 90% of Jews in the world today live in either the USA or Israel. Is it any wonder why Iran calls us the great Satan in Israel? They hate the Jews, you see. That's where anti-Semitism is found on a national scale, is in Iran. But this Gentile recognized this man, of this Abraham, this Hebrew, was the prophet of God. And though he had made a mistake and was judged or was criticized for it, yet he knew that he needed this Hebrew to get to God. Now, the funny part is, when God healed the people, it said in verse 18, for the Lord had fast closed up all the wombs of the house of Abimelech because of Sarah, Abraham's wife. Let me tell you, there were right then some very pregnant women waiting to have their kids, and they couldn't have their kids. Who was it that was so late? Becky. I think it was Becky that was so late. We were hoping for Becky to be born before New Year so we could count her toward our taxes, and she wasn't born until the 19th of January. And poor Mrs. Wright was just suffering and suffering and suffering. And all of our kids, I think, were late. And just waiting and waiting. And here's all these women. They can't have kids. They're past their due date. They're ready to explode. And not one of them could have a child until Abraham prayed. And then all of them had their children at one time. They had a bunch of Philistines with the same birthday because of that prayer. I just find that's I think that's kind of funny, actually. But let me make a conclusion with some observations. No Christian, no matter how long we've been saved or lived for God, is immune from making dumb, faithless decisions. So beware. Well, I've been saved a long time. Yeah, and Abraham's almost 100 years old and still made a dumb decision. How long he walked with God? God ever spoken to you orally? And with your ear? I mean, here's a man who walked with God, and yet even at 100 years old, made a dumb, faithless decision. Don't think that you're immune from it because you've been saved for a long time or been in church for a long time. Then the Christian life needs to be lived honestly. Don't hide behind lies. Don't live a lie. Don't tell your spouse to lie. Don't tell your kids to lie. Be honest people. Don't lead your family to live a lie. Trust God and do what's right. And remember that it's a lousy thing when a Christian hurts his or her testimony. Because it affects him, it affects his family, and it might even affect the lost people around you as it affected all of these people in this story tonight. It's a terrible thing when a Christian has a testimony for dishonesty and has a reputation that has fallen, becomes a corrupt spring.